Auto no-fault insurance reform, a U.S. Supreme Court hearing for Michigan's same-sex marriage ban, and critical budget discussions. Those were among the top political news stories in our state in April. Here to bring us up to speed, freshly back from Washington and the Supreme Court arguments over same-sex marriage, Rick Pluta, good to see you.
Hello, Mark.
And Kyle Malin, MERS co-owner and news editor. Kyle, thank you for joining us.
Hey, it's my pleasure, Mark.
Auto no-fault reform again became a hot news item this month at the state capitol. Reformers include DeWitt Republican State Rep Tom Leonard, who chairs the House Insurance Committee.
My top priorities are ensuring that we keep the best benefits in the country and also finding ways to lower rates for our consumers.
So there it is in a nutshell. Kyle, there was talk that a measure could move quickly this week. Where is this proposal this morning?
Well, they're at a press conference right now. The supporters of changes to no-fault are holding something a little later this morning. That tells me they don't have the votes to move anything in the House this week. It's going to be pushed back till May now, and we'll see if they can round up the Republican votes for it. Right now, they are still getting opposition from Oakland County Republicans and those who feel like the current system of the Catastrophic Claims Association covering the benefits of folks who are quadriplegic and otherwise critically, catastrophically injured in car wrecks are going to be covered.
And Democrats, are Democrats to a person against the, they have no Democrat.
That's
Democratic
right.
There's
support.
One Democrat.
One, okay.
Virgil Smith in the Senate.
Right. In the House, they took a caucus
but
position.
But there's a caucus position. I mean, the thing is, you know, it's they still haven't figured out how they're going to knit together the coalition of votes. That, you know, something that's still floating, you know, it one of the issues with this is, yeah, they're promising a $100 rollback in rates for 2 years, but when you're talking about insurance rate, you know, insurance premiums in urban areas of, you know, $3,000 annually, that doesn't really, really cut it. Now, there is talk of sort of, you know, creating a stripped down version of, you know, with very limited personal injury benefits for, you know, for Detroit at least. But at the moment, that's still a non-starter. So you don't have the Democrats, you don't have the Detroit delegation, that you've got enough Republicans who are concerned about this aspect of it or that aspect of it that they just can't get it across the goal line. I mean, just one other interesting thing is I think the big shift in this from previous years is Republicans and the insurance industry seem to have given up on adopting some kind of cap on Michigan's unique unlimited medical benefits for people who are catastrophically injured and they're looking for savings out of, you know, with you know, new rate schedules and stuff like that.
And in simplest terms, and I tell you, with this issue, simplest terms,
there are no almost, simplest
there
terms.
Are no simple terms when it comes to this thing. But as simple as we can make it, this pits people who want Michigan's very high auto insurance rates to come down and those who support what is arguably the best in the nation catastrophic claims program. Those high rates pay these sometimes extremely expensive medical bills of victims of catastrophic accidents.
Yeah, and it's putting caps or some kind of limitations on how much can be paid out, right? So if you are in the hospital, how much will the hospital accept as far as payment? You know, right now, if you're in a, if you're getting if your pay is from the Catastrophic Claims Association, they can just charge the base rate and they pay it. There's no cap. You know what I mean? And then the other question is too, if you're a family member who's now caring for somebody who's in a wheelchair and is basically going to be, you know, in that wheelchair for life, there's no limit necessarily on how much that person pays. They want to set a $15 an hour limit on how much that relative caregiver gives. And that's another big part here, too, because these relative caregivers are, by and large, you know, just physically, mentally spent for all the hours that the round-the-clock care they give these loved ones. And so they're extremely passionate about this issue, and that passion really spills over in the testimony.
And the insurance companies say, though, that's where a lot of the expense and the feather bedding occurs. And, I mean, you know, we don't have, you know, evidence of it, you know, one way or the other, but they say, you know, that's where it is. And part of it is, I mean, really, this is going to play out in fights over the Michigan Catastrophic Claims Association, which, remember, there is a Michigan Supreme Court case hanging out there about whether or not the information about how they set those fees is public information so that the critics can get at it. And there is a time element that the Republicans would like to get that get this done before that decision comes down so that there's a different association created. Mm. But a lot of this centers around, you know, these fees, because the system is so complex that there is one fee scheduled for Medicaid, another for Medicare, another for workers' compensation. Blue Cross gets its own particular rate. Other insurance companies get get another rate. And basically, there's just a whole lot of cross-subsidization into the system. You start tinkering with this, you're talking about things like how prepared emergency rooms are going to be to deal with catastrophes, whether or not hospitals have the capacity to deal both in the short and the long term with critically injured people. I mean, it ripples out so wide.
Still lifelong benefits, though. Mm-hmm. That would not change. But in the meantime, as long as those benefits are in effect, all kinds of new cost containment measures. Governor Snyder supports, correct?
He does. And, you know, he's been on record of supporting something a lot more stringent than this. I mean, he wanted a lifetime cap. He wanted it to actually create a cap of $1 million. That's been taken off the table, as Rick said. So I have no doubt that he would sign something comes to his desk.
I don't think he'll get it, but I think he'd be very happy with some kind of a cap on benefits and a stripped-down Detroit version. Because remember, the governor's legacy is Detroit and urban areas, and if you don't do something about how much it costs, how much insurance costs in those urban areas, then you're not going to get the turnaround that you're looking for.
Yeah.
This will be maybe our next to last discussion of any real length about Proposal 1, because it'll all be history next Tuesday. Paul Mitchell, who is a leader of the anti-Prop 1 effort, is on the program tomorrow. Roger Martin was on earlier this week. He's on the other side. Just give us your most relevant thoughts on both campaigns here. Where do you think we're at, Rick?
Right now, obviously, the Vote Yes campaign is hoping that a massive ad buy that far outweighs what the No campaign is going out there will be enough to sort of overwhelm the skepticism.
That's in the works?
Done deal? How much more has the pro campaign, you know,
I think it was 1.5. Well, how much have they outraised them? Yeah. Oh, by 36 times more.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just massive, because they know that the skepticism is out there, that's out there is so high that they've just got to, you know, sort of do this overwhelming force strategy to try and get it an inch across the goal line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my prediction is that this is going to fail 60 to 40, somewhere in that area. I give this thing just maybe a 10% chance of passing, just because this issue, I think, is overwhelmed voters. It's so complex that I think they don't trust it. They don't trust government just in general. And so they see something like this and they just have a natural ill reaction
and
to it.
A big part, a major element of the messaging for the Vote Yes campaign is that if we don't do this, then nothing can be done. And, you know, there is no plan B and all of that. I'm just not sure that people buy that.
Let's go there, because I have heard both. There is no plan B.
Well, let's
and
put
other
it to rest
people
right here.
Insist.
There is no plan B. There are there are a multitude of plan Bs out there that people would like to enact, but none of them has a consensus. And if there was a consensus about a sort of more rational plan B, because everyone agrees that Proposal 1 is pretty far from perfect, that they certainly wouldn't have cobbled together something like this.
My take is there's proponents will say there's a lot to like in this bill. There's the earned income. There's the return of the earned income tax credit. It's money for municipalities. But the opponents are saying the exact same thing. There's a lot to dislike in this program.
And they're both right.
What about these plan Bs, though? I mean, here's my question. Could the failure of Prop 1 give any more viability to any of these proposals that right now don't look real encouraging?
I think everything's going to
have
to be.
When it goes down, won't any of those rise to the top as a viable possibility?
I mean, the thing is, it's really in where, you know, we have a more conservative legislature than we had, even though it was a conservative legislature, more conservative, more Republican legislature than we have than the one that concocted Proposal 1. But at the same time, you know, is there enough support out there for a cuts-only strategy for coming up with road money? And the answer, Kyle, 1, 2, 3. three?
No, there's not.
Ironically, one of the options put forth, and it didn't go very far, was tapping into the Michigan Catastrophic Claims Fund.
Yeah, there's its own dangers to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because what happens then, you start tapping into that, then, I mean, that's a pool of money, this $18 billion that's been talked about, that's a pool of money that has been set aside to cover the claims, future claims of people in these catastrophic injuries. So you start tapping into that, you're going to have to start raising the fee now to make up for this new expenditure, which is roads. So if we're paying, what is it, $185, it's going to go $150 or so. Soon, that fee is going to have to go way, way up if we're going to start paying roads out of this thing.
Michigan, this is a big deal. Michigan has a particular budget challenge in that we've got a lot of dedicated restricted funds. And the reason that we have all these dedicated and restricted funds is that people are skeptical of politicians and the fact that they'll go in and raid the national, you know, natural resources trust fund or the veterans trust fund for this or that, and that is actually part of the, you know, of the vote no discussion. And so, you know, people want it both ways. They want voters, they want legislators to look somewhere else, but they want to limit their ability to look somewhere else for this stuff.
Rick Pluta and Kyle Malin join me for Current State's Month in Review on WKAR's Current State. On Tuesday, the U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments involving gay marriage and gay marriage bans, including Michigan's. Rick, you were there, and you had a chance to talk with Michigan plaintiff Jane Rouse.
We're eternal optimists. We're nurses. We don't, you know, we're not going to let our patients fail. We're hopefully not going to let Michigan fail. And, you know, we're going to stay positive till the end.
What's your takeaway from your visit to D.C.?
Well, I did learn, this is not my first time covering the Supreme Court, but I did learn something in this one that I did not know before, which is, courtesy of an announcement from the public information officer, no vaping allowed in the Supreme Court chamber.
Said, let's don't clarify
do
it.
That. I never had the chance to ask, why did you feel the need to explain that explicitly? I think the takeaway is, it's hard to read the minds of nine justices, and, keep in mind, I don't do this on a daily basis. I'm just an occasional visitor, so there are people who do this more than me. But everyone seems to expect that it's probably going to come down, like these earlier marriage cases, to a 5-4 decision. Maybe 6-3, and everyone seems to be keeping their eye on Anthony Ketty and John
on approval.
On whether or not it's going to go. And by the way, the Supreme Court will know how it's going to land tomorrow when the justices meet. We just won't know until the end of June when we expect to get the decision.
That's always interesting. Kyle, what's top of mind for you as we await the SCOTUS decision?
Well, I think my takeaway on this is that eventually we're going to have gay marriage in one way or the other. I mean, if it's because of the Supreme Court or whether they give that power to the state, I think the public sentiment has just gone so far in that direction, and it's trending so far in that direction. I don't think it's a matter of if, it's a matter of when and how.
But if the court goes in that direction, the question is, it's somewhat an issue in Michigan, but also, in lots of other states. We now have thousands of same-sex married couples across the country.
Yeah.
So if the Supreme Court says it's up to the states to decide and it overrules all of those, lower court decisions that struck down marriage bans, how do the states and how does the country navigate that?
And then for the proponents of gay marriage, then what do they do for 2016 as far as a ballot proposal? Because they still want to amend the Civil Rights Act, the Elliott-Larsen Civil Rights Act, to provide anti-discrimination protections for gays and lesbians. Mm-hmm. So do they go for that, or do they go for gay marriage? Do they go for both? That puts a big question on them.
And there is nothing that Republicans want less in a presidential year in Michigan than a ballot proposal like that facing voters.
Let's continue along a slightly different path. There was a hearing this week on a Michigan Religious Freedom Act Tuesday afternoon. I believe this was Senator Jones' Judiciary Committee.
It was.
What came of that?
Well, nothing, except people got to share their minds and their thoughts on what they think of that Freedom Restoration Act. But the request from up above Senate leadership was, please don't move this. I mean, the last thing they want is additional distraction and additional publicity on Michigan on this issue. As we could see from our friends in Indiana,
the governor's already said he'd veto it.
Yeah, it doesn't serve any purpose. Indiana's already gotten a lot of heat for it. They don't want Michigan to have to follow suit on
this. But what it does say is that conservative Republicans in the legislature are looking ahead to a day when same-sex marriage is legal and what kind of lines they might be able to draw around a Supreme Court decision that says that. And that's one of the things that we'll be looking for when it comes down is how sweeping is the decision. You know, does it allow for something like a Religious Freedom Restoration Act to contain how businesses and government respond?
Well, help our listeners understand, though. Hasn't Governor Snyder said that he would be okay with a RFRA measure if it's accompanied by an expansion of Elliot Larson? Is that a way forward? I mean,
I think he put that out there last year, though.
Can those coexist, though? Has anybody looked at that?
No. Well, we tried that last year, and we had two leaders in the legislature last year who were willing to go that route, but the membership wasn't interested because it doesn't appeal to the far right, it doesn't appeal to the left, and so it just didn't go. And so if it didn't go last year when the temperature was right for something like that, it isn't going to go.
Let's talk about budgets, because it is budget season, and the governor's budget is making its way through the legislature.
Well, it was the governor's budget. You know, now it's the legislature's
budget. It's a group budget, yes. The House was looking at an education funding measure yesterday. I think that came to a vote, if I'm not mistaken.
They did pass that. They did pass that out. They changed what the governor wanted, which was $75 more per student for all the schools. And what they did is they changed it to a type of formula where charter schools and cyber schools end up getting almost $300 more per pupil, while some school districts only get $25 more per pupil, because what they tried to do was try and strip out these special pots of money that schools get in order to provide maybe more base funding for school districts, but it didn't necessarily work out that way.
Some school districts said that's what they wanted, which is, you know what, Lansing, instead of carving out our special needs that we're seeing, just give us the whole thing and let us figure it out.
Is this the biggest education budget Michigan has ever seen, as House Appropriations Chair Al Pasholka claims?
Well, it's the most money that's been spent on education, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the folks like where that money is going, because the district...
But in dollar terms, more dollars.
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Right. But the issue, though, becomes is, you've got at-risk schools that maybe necessarily need more money, and they're not getting the additional funding they need to help they feel lift themselves up, while you have cyber schools that don't have brick and mortar facilities, they don't have busing, they're getting more money. So then the school lunch
programs.
They don't provide lunch. So there's some head scratching going on here. Where is all that money going that we're giving to these cyber schools? There's other states that only give them a percentage of the state school aid for their state allocation. Why are they getting so much money?
I wonder if there's an app for that.
That's a good question. Maybe it's to develop apps for us all. We don't really know.
How much more heat will the budget process generate here before the end of May rolls around?
I think this is a pretty subdued budget compared to what we had in many years past. You know, even just 2011, and then during the Granholm years when it was a real big deal. The bottom line is we don't have a ton of money to spend, and we don't have a huge deficit either. So they're kind of constrained in what they're able to spend their money on. So I hate to say it's a ho-hum budget, but it kind of is.
Well, we'll see some flare-ups, but they won't be, you know, the huge cosmic fights that we've seen in years.
We've got less than 30 seconds. Will presidential news be made in Michigan with all these candidates planning to come to the state?
Well, I think we are going to see some with Ben Carson.
Ben Carson's going to announce in Detroit.
That's a pretty big deal. Mm-hmm. And then we got Carly
Fiorina.
She's going to be coming in town. Scott Walker will be coming in town. Michigan's a big state, and folks are going to want to come here. Our primary isn't one of the first, but it's in the pack.
It's not just a big state, but especially on the Republican side, it's also a money state.
We want to thank our two guests, Rick Pluta of the Michigan Public Radio Network, Kyle Malin of MERS News, its current state's month in review for April. Thanks, guys. See you soon.
You're welcome.